Hi, this is Gary Barkalow, and I've got a good friend of mine, Brian Golter, on this logcast recording with me. And Brian recently wrote a book called Your Right Job Right Now. I love the book and his degree of just honesty and humor and some of the sorrow of his life was just so refreshing. It really probably was the best book or writing I've ever experienced where a man really goes through his life of God coming in and doing what he does so well of disrupting our life and then dismantling our life so that he can rebuild it and then release us into the life that he's created us to live and in the role that he has for us in the story. So I'm just excited to have Brian on the phone with me. So, Brian, thank you. Glad you're here with me.
Very happy to be here, Gary. And I want to say that you have to be really qualified to experience the kind of life you just described. I was just so qualified for it because I had nothing going. I was totally at a point in my life when the story took place 26 years ago where almost suicidal, just waking up to that sense of just life isn't worth living. And that's the place where a person is qualified to begin that journey that you just described, when there really isn't anything else to reach for except rescue. So
yeah.
I want to describe how a person becomes qualified for the life you just described. And
you are a prime candidate for this program of God.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, we need to jump right into that. But let me say, because this will help set the context, I think, for those listening, and that is, toward the end of the story that we're going to jump in at the beginning of, you run currently Brian Golter & Associates. It's the search firm in the Silicon Valley area. And so the audience can also look at that by going to bgsource.com. And they can also see your book there as well. So I want them to kind of hear the end of the story, even though that's not the end of the story, a little bit to have context of where you came from, as you said. So kind of jump into that. What was that like, your early life, and then how God started to majorly disrupt and dismantle your life?
Early, I'd grown up in a household where, like so many people, where there's abuse, physical and emotional abuse. It was severe enough that experience had stunted my mental development. So when I arrived at school at age 5, I hadn't learned how to speak. And because I couldn't speak, I couldn't read. So I came in to school to find out that I was this kind of broken idiot. Those are actually the words that fell on me at that time in my mind, not being able to speak or express myself. Let me back up and say my mother could understand my speech. It's just nobody else could. So that's where it begins. And then about 3 years after that, two women came into my life. One was a speech therapist, and another was a teacher at school. And without getting into the details, I think we've all had those people in our stories that show up that are inspirational, that lift us up. And these two, this between the speech teacher and the teacher at school, I, one, learned how to talk and could learn how to read and started to do well in school. So those two people were the first people that showed up as rescue in my life in a big way. And then went off into college, was really still, though, even though I had learned how to do well in school, the deeper problems were still there in terms of still feeling like that castaway, that throwaway. There's something about when you're very young and you can't, and you're rejected, that throwaway, discarded self-image falls on so many people. So I had learned in college how to cover that up through doing well in sports and doing well in classes. Although it was still very much driving my relational life in terms of the type of women I would pick to date. And at one point, I had run out of money, and I was dating a woman at a time. And this is very hard to admit to, but I was dating a woman at a time who had some money. And out of fear of being that broke idiot, I married her. And very quickly we had a baby, and the baby became ill. I took a job that I hated. And so I had I had gone from being a great scholar athlete and living a pretty good life to being broke, idiot, married to the wrong woman, with a baby I couldn't handle, with a job I hated. And I hit this real low point in my life, and I didn't have God or Christ in my life, but I prayed for the first time, and the prayer was, God, bring me somebody who will bring out the best in me. That was the prayer. It's the only prayer I'd ever prayed in my life.
Yeah. So in the college environment, you were in an environment where you could make it work, like you said, through studies and through sports. Now that's, you're out of that environment, right? Can't find a way to make life work outside of that very well. So now obviously you've already said there was major disruption in your life as a young child, but now you can't make life work on your own anymore, right? You're just in a hard situation. I mean, I don't mean to be laughing, but that's such a hard thing, to be in a relationship that you don't think is right. You're in all your circumstances are wrong, including a job that you hate. That is a hard place in life to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. They say the most common form of mental illness in America is the Sunday night feeling of I hate to go to work tomorrow. That feeling of despair that is the most common form of mental illness. And boy, I just remember feeling that so intensely. So yeah, it was real despair. That's the sad part of the story. Should we get to the better part?
Yeah, so I need to hear about how you get to this place where God now is starting to dismantle some more, but he's also about to get into the rebuilding.
Yeah, actually, none of that happened, and I'm really surprised you picked me as a guest on your show, Gary, because it really just got worse from there. But I suppose that's going to make the listeners feel better about their life. So,
yeah.
You know, if that's anyway. Okay, so about 2 weeks later after that prayer, and I would recommend to to anyone listening to this, I really do believe that's a powerful prayer. So, Lord,
yeah.
Bring me somebody who will bring out the best in me. I'm not a big believer in techniques and so forth, but that's one I have seen work wonders. About 2 weeks later, I see an ad in a newspaper, and it says June, and there's a phone number. That's it. And I call her on the line. I don't remember much of what happened in that initial conversation, but I do remember that she talked me into driving an hour and a half to the interview, and I had a beater car that I wasn't sure was going to make it down the street, and one of my criteria for the job was that it had to be local because of the car situation. So somehow she talks me into going to this interview an hour and a half, and I get there, and I'm sitting across from June, and June's a 5 foot, about 250-pound woman, and I'm sitting across from her at the interview, and the first thing I notice about her eyes as she's asking me questions is she has these eyes of a child, and they're just full of joy and full of laughter, even though she's not laughing. And I just immediately want to tell her my whole story. So with very few questions, I'm laying it all out there because she just has that effect on me. I'd be telling the story, and I'd look up to look at her eyes again. And in the middle of my story, her eyes had turned from this childlike glee to the most penetrating look that I'd ever witnessed. It was terrifying, actually. And I felt as though she was looking right through me. I reacted literally in my stomach to that look. But I had become very good. I was a psychology student, and I had become really good at telling a good story about me and about what made me worthwhile and what made me a good candidate. And there are just great stories about how I cared about people in gerontology. I'd worked for in nursing homes, and how I cared about people. It was just this great sales job I had. And I had fooled professors with this story and employers with this story and other people along the way. Nobody questioned the story. When I was done, she asked me, would you like my feedback? And I love this part because this is where people just tell me what a caring guy I am. And I said, sure. She looked up at me and she said, you're the most dishonest person I think I've ever met. And I was just, it was mortifying. I just became 2 inches tall. And then she started talking. I'll just read real briefly from the book because it really captures June better than if I did it spontaneously.
Yeah.
She said, "You lie about everything. And what's worse, I don't think you even know you're doing it. You say you wanted to study psychology so you could help other people. But the truth is you took it so that you could understand yourself and impress other people. You said you studied philosophy because it was a challenge, but you really took it because you liked the teacher. You said you got into gerontology because you like helping people, and I do believe you like helping people, but that's not what really motivated you. You know it, and I know it. You did the same thing with your job at the treatment center. You tell yourself you are helping other people, but in truth, you want other people to be impressed by you. You want to impress them because you're not impressed with yourself. You don't even like yourself. You lie to yourself, and then you actually believe the lie. Listen, you're a smart guy. I can see you want to grow, but I honestly don't think I've met anyone who lies to themselves as much as you do. Let me ask you a question. With the exception of what you told me about graduating from school and what you did in sports, do you know that you are lying about just about everything else you said?"
Well,
and I go on.
What did you do with that? Because I'm guessing that you have never been talked to like that. That level of honesty, mm-hmm. of transparency. What did you do?
What I wanted to do was cry and leave the room. What I did is just sat there. You know, I think anybody who's experienced being really called out knows that feeling of where you really want to die. You want to disappear. But then something starts happening in your stomach, maybe, or within your just the essence of your being. Something's being disturbed. And I sat there and in some strange way was processing this. And something in me went off, and I have to say this is a very subtle something in me that went off, but something said, "Brian, this is what you've always been waiting for. That in order to get the best of you, which you've always wanted, somebody is going to have to call you out on the worst of you."
Hmm.
And so in my broken little, phony, self there, that thought resonated. And so
here's what I'm so amazed by. You are in a job interview when this takes place. This is not a trusted friend, a family acquaintance who just decides they really should be investing in your life because you're kin. I mean, this is a job interview. I mean, talk about a disrupting situation. So one, I'm amazed by that, and the second thing I'm amazed by is your heart's reaction. This is such a good thing, because for the first time, you can't play this game. They really want to get you beyond this. You know what, Brian, here's my impression. My impression is that everybody would have the same reaction, and at first you'd be dumbfounded, you'd be scared, you'd want to find a place to hide or way to run out. But I do think there's also part of our heart that would say, at last, because I'm so tired of upholding a profile, a person that I'm not really, and it's just too much for me to bear anymore.
Yeah, that's why when you introduced me, I explained why I was qualified. you really have to be, I think, at your bottom. I don't think there's anything in my character that was necessarily rose to the occasion as much as my circumstances had fallen to the place that I seeked truth over comfort. I think that explains, I'm going to jump ahead here, I think that explains the reason why so often God engineers our circumstances around adversity.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get to that place before rescue, really, where we are ready for rescue.
Yeah.
Where when it comes, we will receive it. And I think God in all his wisdom knows I can't send rescue here because it wouldn't be received.
Mm-hmm. You know what, let me interrupt with a picture that comes to my mind as you say that. And that is, when I was in high school in southern Florida, I took a life-saving course so that I could lifeguard and just because of my activities around water. And one of the things they taught us was that sometimes if you were to jump in the water to save somebody and they're panicked, they know they are just about to drown and they see no way to survive. And you swim out to them. They said often what happens is they will grab onto you like you're a buoy. And what happens is you both drown.
Mm-hmm.
because they're holding on to you, trying to climb up on top of you to get above, to get air. And so now, therefore, you're trying to save them, but actually now they've prevented you from saving them. You're both going under. And what they taught was that if you do come across somebody who won't let you save them, and in fact is not only going to foil you from saving their life but probably take yours, what you do is you grab them and you take them underwater to the point that they think you're drowning them, and they will let go of you. And that, at that point, once they're up, they will submit to you. And that, I mean, that just pops in my head that that's really what she was doing, where she was, it probably felt like she was going to drown. You were already underwater, and she's going to take you a little deeper and not let you come up.
Yeah.
But it's that very act that you're saying that got you to the point where you're saying, all right, I'm going to submit. Save me now.
And that's part of God, I think, we all struggle with understanding.
Yeah.
And so,
so keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
All right. So, so there she is holding my head in the water. So, yeah, I turned it around very quickly and realized that this was the answer to that prayer. So I begged for the job, and I ended up working for her until she died about 5 years ago. So I worked for her about 20 years. And it was kind of a funny side note that when people would ask her, why'd you hire him in the first place, she really didn't know. I mean, she said, I really don't know. He was worthless. I mean, he had nothing to offer. He was nothing but a project. She really had never, she never in 20 years, and we had grown remarkably close over that time, and she really became mother, father, mentor, everything to me. She never once gave a reason why she hired me that was anything that sounded legitimate. And so the point here I want to say, too, is that this position, the position itself, was the exact opposite of what I wanted in a job. And let me explain it one by one.
Mm-hmm.
The position was commission. And at the time, because of my daughter's illness, I had collection agencies calling me. I could not take a commission position, and this was strictly a commission position. Number two, it, as I already stated, my one criteria for finding a job was it had to be close to home because of my car. This was an hour and a half drive each way. And three, it was making cold calls. And Gary, can you imagine what is the worst job on earth for a kid who grew up with a speech impediment?
That's true.
And so it's being judged strictly on my voice. This is such an important aspect of what I want anyone listening to this to hear, is this job had nothing to do with my passions. It had nothing to do with my desires, it on the surface, I should say, nothing to do with my criteria. The only thing right about the position was her, was the relational aspect of it, that I was being called out on something that was vital to me to be called out on. That was the only part that was right. And that job, after 20 years, turned into the position of my, I always say my dreams, but it's really much better than that. It turned into a position beyond my dreams. Having confronted my fears of being judged by my voice, I went from intimidation around that issue to courage and confidence around my voice, to the point now that I go out and do speaking and other things like that. The commute, I needed that hour and a half because of all the things June would challenge me on every day, I needed to process. And then there's always signs and wonders, and my signs and wonders was my car held up during the time. And on the money, I kept running out of money, and then these, again, signs and wonder, helping hands of God is what they call them, would take place, where people hit my car from behind, their fault, and offered me cash instead so I wouldn't report it. And it's only through those two incidences that I was able to make it financially. I had to quit twice because I was just not only out of money, but seriously, seriously in debt. So it's such an important aspect of career and job search that I think is rarely talked about or understood, that our careers, our calling as it relates to our work, really moves relationally.
Hmm.
And on the flip side of that, for anyone who's wondering, what does that really mean? Well, here's what it means. You have never been happy in a job where you were not treated with integrity or respect.
Yeah.
It never worked out. You never got the benefit that you thought you would get. The money became less significant to you over time. The industry that you thought you were so passionate about, you became less passionate about. Everything rests on the relationship with leadership.
That's such a good point, that a job needs to be about far more than the money or just simply the use of my skills or my ability to improve my, you know, my situation, that there's another side of improving who you are. And I'm struck by what you said, that June treated you with integrity and respect, but it doesn't mean that your relationship with her was pleasant all of the time. I mean, it was hard, the things that she was saying to you, the things that she was getting you to do. But I know, knowing the end of the story, that she knew what she was doing, and what she gave you was such a huge gift of you becoming the man that she could kind of see you could be.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
It is. And, you know, even as I mean, she's been gone now, you know, almost 6 years. Even, you know, when I started remembering back into that first day, you know, that I just recounted, I still get teary-eyed, because now I'm overwhelmed by the love of it, the absolute love of a stranger for another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I write somewhere in the book towards the end that other than laying down your life for somebody, I really don't think there's a greater form of love. And as you said, it's remarkably disruptive. It's incredibly uncomfortable. There's really nothing attractive about it on any level that we're used to thinking about what's attractive and what's not. And I want to pause because, you know, usually by this time in the story, a lot of people are thinking like, well, that's great. He met somebody like that, but I haven't met somebody like that. This is an unusual story about one person. It's not. It's everybody's story. The reason we don't find the Junes out there or the sages or the people that could really lead us into becoming, as you said, the people that God wants us to become or designed us to become, is we do not look for them. We do not make that our primary focus. We hope it happens. It's not that we are oblivious to the attempt or the desire for that type of person. But what I've learned over watching careers over these many years is the people who find their June are the people who single-mindedly want that above everything else. And they're willing to let go of the thing they want second in order to get that great leader.
Yeah.
And very few people are operating in their careers that way. And
And
so it's not that there are so few Junes out there. That's not really it. And it's not that my story is just an exceptional story about one guy. If it was that, I wouldn't have written the book. It really is everybody's story.
Yeah.
And we all need to be trained up in overcoming these deceptive goals that the world and our enemy and our parents and, you know, all down the road have been teaching us will bring us fulfillment.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Brian, as you're saying this too, I'm thinking that there are probably people listening who maybe aren't in the work world, don't need to be. And even the thought of just pursuing outside of the work environment people who will help really develop us. It's this person. It's like you said, it's the person who speaks truth and who will get us to a place, no matter how painful, that we need to get there. It's, again, the person that, or people that God will use to disrupt, dismantle, rebuild and release us. I think about that Oswald Chambers quote where he said that God gives us a vision and then he takes us down into the valley to batter us into the shape of that vision, and it is in that valley where so many of us faint and give way. Boy, as I was reading your book, I kept thinking about that quote because I thought, you know, there were 1,000 times where you drove away and could have said, I'm not driving back. This can't be right if it's this hard. She's this hard towards me. It's not going that well. Because, you know, again, we got people that go, oh, you know, if you're kind of in God's will and you're doing what he wants, it should be a pretty sweet deal. You know, in the end, he really does. And to get us trained and give us the strength and be the kind of person that could do what we, our whole life, have been preparing to do and most want to do, that's going to take some work, probably. So keep going with your story. I know there's so much more fascinating story in this.
In terms of, it was a 20-year process, so none of this is a quick fix. So over those 20 years, she just layer by layer, Gary, just took away one lie or, you know, challenged me on one fear at a time. June's real expertise, and I think the expertise of any sage, is they don't talk in terms of 10 things you need to do. God, I really believe this, puts one difficult thing in front of us at a time. And it's that thing in our back of our mind we know we need to do, but we can probably get away without doing it. And what a great teacher does is they just deal with that one thing. And they're very good at identifying it. And then they're very good about not allowing you to get sidetracked or put up excuses.
Yeah.
You know, I want to state very clear that June always moved in love. She always saw the best in me. And when she spoke challengingly, it was always in love. And so without exception, truly without exception. The testimony to that is that I was ready to leave her at any time. If I ever saw that she was not worthy of trust, I mean, one mistake, I would have left. So, I mean, that sounds almost supernatural, but that I was so ready, like, show me one thing that's wrong with you and I will leave this situation. I never saw it, with one exception at the very end of her life where God allowed it to come in so I could separate from her, but that's a whole nother story. And the love is what you mentioned. It's that ability to see somebody as God sees them, as who they're designed to be, and from that place, call them out on the person that they're being.
Right. That's so good, because it's a difference between saying something that might have some tension to it because you're calling somebody to something that you know is greater about them, versus saying something that's hard, which is doing nothing more than putting attention to something that's weaker in them.
Yep. That's why I say a sage. We need to seek out sages, because it's very easy to find people who will criticize you. It's very easy to find people who will find their own validation in putting you down. And that's the opposite of a true sage. You know, that's why it's important to be able to discern the difference. That discernment, again, comes in, Gary, when that's what you want most. You mentioned Oswald Chambers. I wrote one little quote from him, that faith never knows where it's being led, but it loves and knows the one who is leading it. And then he goes on to say, it is a life of faith, not of intellect and reason, but a life of knowing who makes us go. That's a capital who. The root of faith is the knowledge of a person, and one of the biggest snares is the idea that God is sure to lead us to success.
Yeah.
It's personal with God.
Yeah.
Very personal.
And one of the things I love about your story, Brian, is that, you know, now your message is so needed and you speak it so well because you speak it out of your own experience of your life and God's pursuit of you. But I love the fact that, you know, in the early part of the story that you started telling us about, all you wanted was to be able to survive, get a job, get some money. And I just love how God just kind of pursues you. He gets you somewhere that you wouldn't have picked if you had understood everything. And yet it's the best thing for you. It's going to change your life. And so in the beginning, right, he's just choreographing things. And of course, later on in our life when God says, okay, now you know enough, you start making right choices here. But I love how he kind of snuck up on you.
Didn't feel like that to me. It felt like a club over the head. And so, but yes, it is. Somewhere in there, I really believe it's not something about Brian or something about Gary. Or it really is that there's a yes. There's this, in your deepest place of your being, there's a yes that says, I want to be loved like that. I want to be loved like that. I want to be called out on the part of me that's probably I could go my whole life without anybody ever knowing. Mm-hmm. And I just say, yes, I want that exposed, and I want that changed. And I think God responds to that every time. I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. I think he's just waiting for that to happen. And and he will deliver that person and those circumstances. I'll say this. It's probably not always a person. It's often a person. But it's always the circumstances. He will deliver the circumstances that will allow you to begin the work of changing whatever that is that you like least going on in your life,
mm-hmm.
in your identity,
well,
I should say. It's really identity.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people that think or wish, as I did at one time, that I could develop, grow, mature, strengthen, just by, you know, reading some books, working through some curriculum. But it just seems like, you know, real development is going to take place as we go through circumstances, and not always, but almost always, through relationship or relationships.
I'm really glad you said that. It's one of my big frustrations. You and I were talking about this beforehand, is that I see so many good resources of inspiration. Men come out of boot camp, men come out of calling retreats, men come out of sermons, men and women. Men and women read a great book, and it's so hopeful. It just feels like this is it. This is the answer. Now I have what I need to become the person I want to be. And then it's gone. 2 or 3 weeks later, it is just gone. And then we're on to the next thing, next inspiration. I see this everywhere I go, and that it's very difficult to hang on to inspiration. And I think we've become conditioned, Gary, to actually not understand that development is critical to applying inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's kind of like the metaphor of Wallace and Braveheart. He gives the speech, and they all think, yeah, let's go. I think that's where we're at now, right now. There's a lot of men and women that are hearing the speech and saying, yes, let's go. But after two steps, we forgot where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot that we're even going to go fight the British and to bring our best and to the worst. So it's that development. It's that ability to keep going into those, to realize that inspiration, to make it real. And it does take time. It does take relationships, the right relationships, and it takes the commitment and the discipline to go through it. And again, I think we just need to find those sages in our life that will do that for us, that will hold us to that standard of, you know, Gary, you read that book the other week, and you said you're going to, you know, all about, you know, that you got all this about compassion. You know, well, it's 3 months later. Are you a far more compassionate person?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, what happened? And what steps did not take place?
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah, and I say this in the kindest possible way, you know, that type of thing. That's all development. And I love that you in the calling retreats, you talk about development. Such a critical aspect of becoming the people we want to become. You know, and I'm thinking too, maybe on a different note, but as we're talking, I'm thinking of the Gospels. It's really good for me to go back and actually read how Jesus spoke, and it really is amazing to me how often he's either creating circumstances or speaking to people in a way that's not unlike what we're describing here.
That's a great point. I mean, I had not looked at the Gospels and Jesus' work, his life, in terms of those two things, speaking to a person or creating circumstances. The two words I'd probably use that pop in my mind is he's either a counselor or a choreographer.
Mm.
He's always up to one or both, sometimes simultaneously. Now, let me ask you, the last kind of place you left us in your story with June was here you're doing cold calling and just how hard that was for you. On every front, on the financial front because it was commissioned, actually doing it front because of your thought about your articulation and so on. So now get us toward the end, because Brian Golter and Associates was really the continuation of her business that you mm-hmm. came into. So there was some point where I'm guessing that you loved the work that you would continue it.
It was amazing how, I mean, we know, probably most people listening to this know how the enemy will come at your strength early in life. He will, you know, rob you or attack the very thing that really is an expression of your glory. That was exactly the case. I found I loved counseling people on their careers. I loved the guttiness of making those cold calls, knowing that I had something really great to offer. And financially, after a period of testing, it really just continued to go up and up and up, and to a point where it became very lucrative. But the key point there was I was always doing what I loved, and the essence of what I loved was rescue. It was exactly giving to others what June had given to me, and the freedom that she had given, and the knowledge, the ability to hear, go through a resume, and articulate to someone exactly where they had fallen into compromise and were not being honest about it, just to get people back to that, you know, that same place I sat in that chair in the first interview of just like, boy, I got nothing else here. I might as well come clean. I might as well be who I really am. Who I really am, I'm not very happy with right now. Because from that place, you're qualified. Mm-hmm. From that place, then God can begin. And we can. I could do what June did, which would put people back in healthy relationships that would springboard them over time in terms of their confidence and well-being and fulfillment and calling.
Yeah. And that's what you do so well. I mean, that's the effect of your life, I feel, on my life. I mean, one, I love the friendship that we have. I love to talk to you. I love to hear your voice. I love when we laugh together. I love how you challenge me. I love how you go after things. I love how you hear God for me and bring his words to me. This really is the effect of your life. It's amazing. Let me say this. I am thankful for what you had to go through, the hardship, the pain, the suffering, the endurance that it took, the perseverance, because I get to experience the fruit of all that in my life. I cherish it because you are so much of that to me. Mm. And I knew you had to pay a price to be the man you are today that I'm experiencing. And I think people are that they're experiencing this of you right now over something as distant as listening to your voice over a computer or on an iPod.
Thank you, Gary. I really appreciate that. And you know, as you're saying that, and I'm struggling, of course, with really taking it in and taking it in. My mind was wandering exactly back to June and thinking that's how I'd see her. She endured just so much more than what I had to endure. And I guess that's it. I guess that's really it. Is that when we, maybe this is a difficult concept, but when we suffer well, we really create opportunities for others.
Yeah.
We need help to suffer well. Nobody suffers well on their own.
As you say that, I think about that scripture in the Gospels where it says that Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. That obviously grew in wisdom. We know what that means. He grew in stature. It means physically. And grew in favor with God and with man. And if that was his process, ours is going to be similar, because it says in Luke 6:40, said a student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. So yeah, we're going to go through that same thing so that we really will become more like Jesus. And so we're going to have to be trained. There's going to have to be growing in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. Brian, thank you so much. This has been so good.
Mm. Gary, one of my absolute favorites. And I hope that gets on the recording.
Okay.